are listening to Zero Discussion.
Well, well, well. Nice of you to show up. That's meant to be a joke, you know, from somebody who's just disappeared for about 30 to 35 days and really hasn't said anything. Hi. Welcome to Zero Distortion. It's been kind of a month. A lot of stuff has happened. I think mentally, I think I kind of needed a little bit of a break from both shows. And now I've decided that that the other one is coming to a close. Because, I don't know, it doesn't have any traction anyways. I mean, it takes time to build the traction, but it doesn't have traction now. And I just don't. The process is more, it's longer, it's more arduous with that one. This one is more like, yeah, I can do it in my spare time and do it relatively quickly. And I'm not like pumping out episodes like I was back in the day when I first started, but I can make it relatively simply and quickly and easily. And it's pretty relaxed. The other one is like, I would have to sit down and read through sections of manga and, you know, make notes. So that's more of a, granted with this, well, no, with this, it's not as bad because I have to sit down and listen to an album. So, you know, at the worst, probably like 75 minutes of my time and that's it. Whereas with the, I don't know, it might actually be around 75 minutes of my time altogether doing the reading. But the problem is, eventually you get to the point where it's like, I don't want to read right now. I'm done. And that point gets closer and closer every time. And eventually you're just not even wanting to do it, which, you know. But I'm here. I have snuck out of my room at 6 a.m. to do this. Guys, it's kind of been insane. I don't remember what the last thing was we talked about, so let's play a little bit of a catch-up. So I can't remember. I think I recorded one episode after we went camping that one time. Because there was a time, because we went camping with our friends, and then like the next week or the week after that, we went camping ourselves as a family. And it was really nice, beautiful place. It's this guy doing a thing called Hip Camp, which is Airbnb for camping, basically. I mean, I would recommend this guy. I don't know about everybody, and, you know, every other hip camp director could be a, I don't know, an axe murderer, but this guy seems to be pretty decent. So the first camping trip, was when I think I found out while we were out there. And here's the fun part about Northern Arkansas. Not a lot of coverage for T-Mobile, which is who I have. Here in Little Rock, it's great. I love T-Mobile. I love the way they do things. I love the phone selection. The only issue is, you know, the coverage when it's good, which, like, where I'm at, it's pretty good. But when it's not good, it's like gone. It's literally gone. And I say that, I'm at like half bars now. But anyways, so I'm driving around frantically trying to let this song play while I'm trying so hard to let this song play while we're driving around looking for a store because we needed something. Oh yeah, the first night we got it. At first it was like, yeah, there's not going to be any rain this weekend. If there is, it's going to be light. Then it started raining a little bit after we got in. It was dark. We set up our tent and everybody was like, oh, it's starting to rain. Let's go inside. And what happened? It turned into a freaking tsunami. I mean, our tent didn't get blown down, but the awning, not the awning, the tarp on top, we had a leak. We didn't have a tarp on top. We had a tarp on bottom because I thought I'd put it down to kind of keep ants out because there were ant hills everywhere. We basically had set up camp on top of ant hills. So we ended up going into my buddy's tent, which is about the same size, a little bigger. And then his tent proceeded to almost fall down. It was a night. It was a night. I mean, all our stuff got wet. We had to leave it and hanging out. We had to go buy some more clothes, some more stuff at the store the next day. Anyways, to the music. This is when I found out that Lorna Shore had released a single. And at the same time had announced that they have a new album, that their new album is, I think it's releasing in October, and it is called Pain Remains. Everybody had some feelings about the cover for Pain Remains. I get it. Like, I have those feelings as well, because when you look at And I Return to Nothingness, it's this amazing painting called. I actually looked at this artist because it's the same artist that did a lot of metal, like independent metal covers and some not, like this one. It's called like the Queen of Patience. And then they are the same one who did Mirror Reaper by Bellwitch and a couple other ones I can't think of. But they went from that to like this bold, fat, sans serif letters, just reading Lorna Shore, Pain Remains, semi-stylistically around like a little frame of someone about to slit their throat, and it's like, it seems a little on the nose for them. I don't know. It's just a little weird. But it doesn't have me spun up into a tizzy. So, you know, there's that. But they released a single called Sun Eater. My God. These guys don't, they don't stop. They don't stop. It's utter insanity. Some of the most disgusting and nasty stuff that I've heard in a while. Do I want to curse? Do I want to curse. Okay? I think the cleanness of the show might be done. I'm not going over the top here. It's going to be more of like just a natural how things come to me. So, yeah, let me start by saying this is some of the most brutal, nasty shit that I've seen from them so far. Like, even if I was going to like stack up a bunch of different deathcore bands, that this would be one of the heaviest, nastiest, most disgusting things that I have in recent memory. God, I can't stay still. So, let's see, what else happened throughout this time period that I've been just effed off? I'm trying to remember. Oh yeah, Haunter, this death metal band out of Texas that I kind of like. They just up and decided they were releasing an album. They didn't just up and decide. It's probably been known, but it came out and I had no idea it was gonna happen. And I just saw a review of it and I was like, okay, that's fine, cool. And it's pretty good. I forgot about that one until just now. I can't think of anything else until what I'm calling like the Roaring June or whatever the it's June has just been absolute insanity, I would say. Like, okay. We'll start with the first Friday of June. I kind of was j I had been listening to every single that the algorithm put out, knowing that he was going to release the entire album beforehand, just by virtue of how it was being done, that we got pretty much every song beforehand, leading up to it. And honestly, I know I fuss about how singles are released, but here's the thing. There's kind of two ways to do it. Either release just a couple of singles and give a clear sound and a clear idea of what this album is going to do, or you just release all of it leading up. That's what Sleep Token did with Sundowning. They released every 2 weeks a new song, and by the time the new album came out, it was like I was already familiar with everything, but yeah, I'm still buying it. I still went on Amazon and bought the album because it's great. It's fantastic. Data Renaissance, the new, I forgot who I'm talking about. The algorithm. It's wonderful. We're going to talk about it in the coming weeks. I'm going to try and stay like in order, on track. In fact, next week is probably when we talk about Data Renaissance, because I don't know. This is all wild. What else? So, before a day before, I thought of this band that I like called Artificial Brain, and I was like, you know what? I kind of want to listen to some dissonant death metal type stuff. So I went and looked and, or I looked them up. I looked them up for some reason. I did want to listen to them, but there I had another reason I looked them up, and I saw, huh? Do they have an album coming? And lo and behold, Artificial Brain's self-titled album was due to be released the next day. I was like, what is happening? What the hell is happening? I mean, not how did I miss this? And then I was like, wait. Doesn't Data Renaissance release tomorrow? Data Renaissance releases tomorrow too. It was a good day. It was a good day because I listened to those singles and I don't know. We'll talk about it because I intend on covering pretty much every album I'm speaking of here. It's really good. It feels kind of different from their other two albums, but I'm not familiar enough with them to really like step in. It just feels more light. It feels brighter. There we are. Because like if you go listen to what is it, the Labyrinth Constellation from, okay, I'm losing my mind, losing my mind. Yeah, I guess it would. No, it's not Labyrinth Constellation, the song. If you go and listen to the first track from Labyrinth Constellation is Brain Transplant, thank you. And the first one from Infrared Horizon, amazing album titles these guys have. Floating in Delirium? And then the second is Synthesized Intellect, which is the song that you probably know from Artificial Brain if you know of them, but are not super familiar with them. And then they've got a sick logo for the self-titled. The first track, Artificial Brain. So that means we get to talk about Artificial Brain from Artificial Brain by Artificial Brain. I'm happy. So that was a great day. And then not too long before that, I had realized, so Kardashev has an album coming out. Like, I thought to look up Kardashev on Bandcamp for some reason. I don't remember. I think I was just literally like, what is Kardashev up to? Looked him up. They had a new video, a new song. I knew they were signed to Metal Blade. I was over the moon when they got signed to Metal Blade. Kind of like, more than Wilderun. Like, when Wilderun was signed, I was like, of course they were. They should be signed. Like, they're fantastic. That doesn't make any sense for them not to be signed. They should have been swooped up. Like, y'all got to pick. I mean, it's not like they got picked up. It was good. I was very happy that Wilderun got signed. And then when Kardashev got signed, it was really like, oh my God, yes. Because I've always said, if you give Kardashev like a full length album, they're going to really do some interesting stuff. And the first time I listened to Liminal Right, we were driving to Mississippi to drop off my kid. No. The first time I listened to it, I don't remember what I was doing. I was at work. I don't remember what I was doing. I had a normal first listen, I think. Yeah. I was at work. Yeah, because I worked part of the day and then I came home. No, I was off that day. Yeah, I was. I cannot remember. Yeah, I was off that day. I was off that day. That was the 10th, yes. Because that's the day we drove to Mississippi to drop my kid off at camp. She's been there all week, and we're going to pick her up Wednesday. Well, we're leaving Tuesday. I'm off Wednesday. We're going to drive back Wednesday. That way I don't have to drive 8 hours. It's like four there, four back. Yeah, the first time I listened, I was in the car. Then, because I was like, I gotta listen to this album. I have a feeling about this album. And my feeling was not only that I'm gonna love it, but my feeling was that it might be my favorite album of the year. And there, it has many moments. The very first listen wasn't rough. It was just like, there's a lot to pick up on and unpack. And I'm not sure I'm saving this one. I'm not sure if I want to try and do an analysis or whether this one might be one that I need to like get it reviewed first and get it out there and get my feelings about it out there and then maybe return to it. Like there's some other ones where I'm like, there's a story here, but I don't know it. And I really just want to give it a review. This might be one of those where I give it a review and come back to it later. This album has numerous moments that blew me away. Like, totally blew me away in many different ways. And just, it makes you feel so much. And I'm just overjoyed that not only is this Kardashev's major label debut on Metal Blade, I need to change the batteries in my, my fire alarm. So, yeah, that's going to be a thing until I do that. Hopefully, maybe I'll do it today before the next episode. We'll see. Depends on whether I remember or not. not only is this Kardashev's major label debut for Metal Blade, it's also a smash hit. Like, I think the only disparaging comments I've heard are of the mix. And I've only seen that on Reddit. Reddit. It's a little muddy. It's one of those things when I go back, someone said The Barring of Shadows had a great mix. And I went back and I listened, I was like, yes, it's very, very clear. I wish that they had kept it mixed exactly like that. And then this album probably would have been like perfect. Again, doesn't really bother me that much. I'm not crying real tears or anything. But when we got to Mississippi, I realized that I had forgotten about an album that was supposed to come out by a band that I haven't really paid any attention to, because I'm not a big like modern metalcore guy. Like, whether that to you means djent, or whether it means like, you know, the more new metalcore leaning bands, or like just the heavy metalcore that we have now, like, you know, Of Mice and Men. Is Asking Alexandria still around? Like, bands, you know, what are some other bands? North Lane, Currents, Unprocessed, things like that. I'm not that big on it. But I'm not gonna lie. I wasn't really like big on this band at first. My first exposure to them was when I was watching WWE like really religiously, one of the NXT shows, the theme song was Voices. And I think it was more so around the time when Disguise was out, as opposed to Graveyard Shift by Motionless and White. And I still haven't listened to Graveyard Shift. I've only really listened to Disguise and their new album, Scoring Me Into the World. See, when they put out, because they had already put out Cyberhex, and I was like, ah, it's good. Then they put out Masterpiece, and I was like, this is also really good. Oh man, I can't remember what order they put it out. Because if you were going by listens alone, you would probably say this was my album of the year. And it's hard for me not to use that as a genuine metric, because I have listened to it a metric fuck ton. Because it's good, it's fun. The whole album. Yeah, I guess it was Cyberhex, Masterpiece. What am I doing? Go to the artist. The singles are there. Cyberhex, Masterpiece, Slaughterhouse, and then Scoring the End of the World. So, that's 4 out of 13 songs. That's a lot. I was hoping they would stop. I wish they hadn't released the last song again. But what they did release, Cyberhex is really good. Masterpiece is fantastic. And yeah, people will probably say, really? Isn't this album kind of cringy? Isn't this band kind of cringy? Isn't that on brand for metalcore? Like, isn't that what you came for? For it to be at least kind of cringy? I don't find it super cringy. I find, like, moments to be a little cringy. But overall, like, no. Like, I find Masterpiece to be very, very, very emotional. And Slaughterhouse is fantastic. You just think it's like a metalcore band just being like, oh yeah, fight the system. This is the song to do it to. And also they brought Brian Garris. And that was the moment when I was like, I need to listen to more of this band. Because, and yes, I know part of it was Brian Garris, but they bring in Brian Garris and he's got kind of that edge, that hardcore feel to his stuff. Brian Garris, of course, from Knocked Loose. And then it gets to the end of the song, and it's like, it slows down, and I remember literally looking at the speaker like, what's happening? And then I heard Brian Garris come in and start the ending part, and I put my hand on my head like, Oh, God, no. They brought a knocked loose breakdown into the Motionless in White song. God help us all. Bracing myself. It's not like crap your pants level, but it's really good. We're gonna talk about that one for sure, 'cause I mean that I like I said, I can't stop listening to it. It's one of those things, when I want to just listen to something, it's like, yeah, that's what I'm gonna listen to, I guess. What else? 3 days ago, I'm sitting at work. I hop on Reddit just to see what's going on. Darren Gray dropped a new album. What? What? One of my favorite bands ever. One of my favorite metal bands ever dropped an album. I had no idea. Granted, I haven't been paying attention. They released two different singles from this album, I think. And the way it seemed, I think in Japan, I don't know, we might have moved back to releasing a boatload of singles beforehand. Because Darren Gray, I mean, I'm pretty sure from like their 2003 album Vulgar, which I did cover a long time ago, I think what they did is. I think what they basically did was they released like half the album. I mean, Obscure was a single, Kasumi, Child Play, Child Play. What else? I mean, they released a bunch of singles and then the album came out. Like the singles came out years in advance. That's how it's always been. But Darren Gray put out a new album. I wasn't really feeling their last one, The Insulated World, and the one before that, Arch, I felt a little bit more, but still. This one, they're back to scary. They're back to creepy. They're back to like dumb Spiro Sparrow. Scary. Like it's heavy. Now granted, I mean they've been heavy since like what? Since Dumb Spiro Sparrow. I think they've locked themselves into A in earnest and have not left that tuning since. I don't think they ever will. I think they just love it. I don't know if they still do it the way they used to, where I think Die played a six string tune to drop A, and Kaoru would play a seven string tune to drop A, which is a lot easier to do. Again, we're gonna talk about it because it's pretty good. It's pretty good, and like I said, Darian Gray is one of my all-time favorite bands. God. Okay, we're almost caught up here. Let's see, let's see, let's see. Another one. I woke up the other day and Rings of Saturn put out an album too. Now that was probably already known that it was gonna happen. I don't follow Rings of Saturn. And I knew that they were moving in an instrumental way, direction. And it has been 3 years since Gideon, their last album, which was pretty good. It's weird. It's weird. This is not what I expected when I thought of Rings of Saturn instrumental. I was thinking of what is that? What is that freaking massive epic song? I think it's from Lugal Kyan. What is it? What is it? Come on. The Heavens Have Fallen. Like, they usually throw in a really, really like top-notch instrumental. And that's what I was expecting, like nothing but that. Like maybe this band was meant to be instrumental. No, it's different. It's weird. Again, we'll talk about it because I've got catching up to do. And finally, well, at least finally for now, because I gotta stop and I gotta get to what I'm talking to today, because it's been 30 minutes. And I missed you guys. How are y'all doing? I'm sorry. But hey, at least it wasn't 8 months this time. Seriously, I'll try to be a little bit more vocal next time. I just drop off the face of the planet. I'll be like, hey, I'm going to drop off the face of the planet for like a month and try to make it actually just a month. Let's see. White Ward. If you've ever heard of White Ward, they're kind of a, I think they're not American. They're from Europe, I think. They're kind of an atmospheric black metal band, but they throw in like saxophone, and they're really good at crafting, like they craft an environment with their sound. Like their last album, the cover of Love Exchange Failure, the cover is like this cityscape. And it's like, if you ever want to get the feel for that, listen to the first like few minutes of that album. The first few minutes of that album, you hear like sirens and stuff, and it sets the feel. And then the opening piano parts, and then you get this saxophone, and it feels like the opening credits to some movie. Like you could throw it in the opening credits for like Jackie Brown, and it'd fit. And then after like 3.5 minutes, it's just this pummeling blast beats and screeches, and it's fantastic. It's something else. Their new album, False Light, they do that, but in the opposite. Instead of a an urban scene, it's a rural scene. Like you look at the cover, and it's this desolate, like desert area with just a house. The first few minutes, it sets you up, and you can feel it. They're really good at that. This album is really great. Definitely gonna talk about it. So, guys, it's been a long time. It's been a bit. It's been a bit. Introducing pageless format. Okay, sure, I'll try it. Ooh. I like that. Thank you, Google. What are we here to talk about today? We're here to talk about Matthew K. Heafy and his interesting black metal side project called Ibaraki and their debut album, Rashomon, which came out like over a month ago, getting up to 2 months ago. This has been written for a while, and I'm jumping into it. So forgive me if I stumble over my own notes. It's just I gotta do it. So Ibaraki is a project that was formed a long time ago. This is some of these songs on this album date back to like the early 2010s, I think. I think that's about as far as they go, is the early 2010s. But this has been a project that he's been working on for quite some time. He wanted to kind of try something different and try to make an album leaning more towards black metal. And I mean, feel-wise, it's more mythical. I want to say it's more mythical than what Trivium usually does, but I mean, Trivium's third album literally was like all myth. It's all like Japanese and Greek myth. This one is it's just drenched in Japanese folklore and mythology. I've even thrown in some explanations because I wanted to get some translations for some of the I wanted to get translations for some of the song titles turns out when I went to Genius, because I forgot Genius existed, the somebody had put in like little blurbs from an interview with Heafy, and it helps explain stuff a little bit. I think it's basically just Matt, but I think also Isan is part of it officially. I have trouble with this. I'm gonna look it up. No, not here, because then you'll hear me clicking on the keyboard, and that is very unprofessional. Search it up. Search it up. Talk about a song that features Isan. There is a song that features Isan. Maybe it's just Matt. I couldn't totally understand, because it seems like at one point it seems like Isan is part of the project. At one point it seems like he's just on the song. Which song is it? Gosh darn it. Tamashii no Hokkai. I don't know if I pronounced that properly. I try with Japanese stuff, but sometimes the pronunciation is off. But he goes and he grabs like death metal and black metal royalty to do their parts on this, and bring, if there wasn't already legitimacy, because he's legitimate. He's a great musician. I mean, he definitely got guys in to bring in some legitimacy, and some that you really wouldn't expect either. But we'll get to it. So, I had heard about this project and I'd heard about this album, and I was kind of into the idea, but the closer it got and the more I listened to the singles, the more I was kind of like, not wrapped up in it, but I was ready. I was very hyped up for it. And by the time it came, my first impression was that it's very good. Lots of different feelings, lots of different sounds, just lots of different little pieces in here. And over time, it just continued to get better and better. Obviously, because of just the stupid amount of stuff that's come out in the past month, I haven't listened to it since I wrote this. But I feel like if I listened to it again, I'd be like, yep, it feels even better than it did before. It feels great. So let's get into it with Hakaneki Hitsuzen. Translated, that's fleeting inevitability. And here's what was said about it. The title translates to necessary fragility, so that's different. Although I think it's just inevitability, necessary, that's not the same, but it kind of makes sense for them to be interchangeable. And then fragility, fleeting fragility, I mean, fleeting, fragile, yeah, though it makes sense. The title translates to necessary fragility, which is something that Isan told me that we needed to salvage from black metal. Originally, I was like, well, black metal's all about mechanical precision on the instruments and very tight technical stuff. He's like, no, it's the opposite. It's actually very organic, an almost punk rock sloppy thing that needs to happen. That's the necessary fragility he was describing. My good friend Ken Sakurada, who owns Shin Sushi in Orlando, helped me with these translations and come up with this new Japanese term. Makes sense, 'cause I mean, let's be re I'm listening to last podcast on the left, re-listening to their series on Norwegian black metal, and of the bands from that scene that were around in the early days of, church burnings and stuff, Emperor was one of them. I mean, their drummer stabbed a guy to death. Like, I just to be evil or whatever, because I don't understand these kids. Like, this stuff was so ridiculous. And also, it makes me wonder how much Isan, what all Isan participated in. I wonder. But yeah, Isan knows what he's talking about, because black metal back in the day was, it was a lot like punk, like these, the second wave, if you will, with like Mayhem and Emperor, Gorgoroth, bands like that. Those guys, they all had kind of a way about them where it was like real lo-fi DIY kind of stuff. And yeah, I could see you comparing punk rock to black metal. So the song, it's the intro. It's almost got kind of a jaunty start with like a piratey sound. Like a swashbuckling tune. It's like a sh it's like, it's a shanty. It's like a shanty. And then there's a musical theme here that returns later. I mean, there's not that much to talk about. It's a fun little intro. So we move on to, I think I've always said Kagutsuchi, but that's the American Kagutsuchi. That's the American way of pronouncing it. It's probably Kagutsuchi, if I had to guess. From old Japanese, Kagutuchi, pardon, Kagutsuchi, also known as Hi no Kagutsuchi or Homusubi, among other names, is the god of fire in classical Japanese mythology. That's like one detail I actually knew. Because I think Kagutsuchi is something from Naruto. So, Naruto pulls a shitload of stuff from legends. Basically, the entire realm of abilities that the Uchiha used, like Susanoo. Pretty sure they have Kagutsuchi. Amaterasu. That's all. All of it is from, I think it's all from Yamada no Orochi, which I'm really only truly familiar with from watching a Let's Play of Okami back in the day. Now we get right into things. Immediately, it doesn't sound like black metal outright. It's got a tinge of trivium to it. Let's just be real. It's got a tinge of trivium to it, but it's just dripping with this Japanese folk feeling coming from, there's this weird, whatever stringed instrument it is, I don't know. It's some kind of folksy kind of Japanese instrument in particular. But it makes you think of the difference in folk music, folk metal in particular. When you go from place to place, you think, when you immediately think of folk metal, what do you think of? Think of Viking metal. That's what you think of every time. Every time. Don't lie to me. Don't lie to me and say, "Oh no, I think of like South African folk." No, you don't. No, you think of Amon Amarth. You think of like Finn Troll or something like that. You think of Viking metal. Tear and stuff like that. No. There's so much. There's Japanese folk metal that sounds kind of, like this, and then there's Chinese folk metal. There's folk metal from like every scene, and it's crazy. I don't listen to folk metal that much, but I've heard bits and pieces of different folk metal scenes, and it's all different. And it's really cool to think about that, because everybody's got their own mythology and their own, superstitions, their own stories, their own culture, and it gets pumped into this. It gets pumped into the folk metal. And that's no different here, even though he is Japanese, but I'm pretty sure he was born in Orlando. But that doesn't take his culture away from him. I mean, the man is Japanese, and if he's in touch with his roots and he, you know, displays that, you can't stop him. I mean, you really can't. That's like if I got in touch with my African roots and decided to make, like, African folk metal. What are you going to do? Tell me that's not right? That's cultural appropriate. Whose culture? It would be my culture. So, no, it's not cultural appropriation. It would be fine. It would be weird if I tried to make Chinese folk metal, because I've never been to, or nor was I born in China. And no one from my family was, to my knowledge. Anyways, I digress. So, the song is very thrashy. It's got kind of a clean chorus. And again, it really does sound kind of like Trivium. The black metal elements don't really shine here for me. And really don't throughout most of the album. Like, there's blast beats over violin playing the theme from the intro. And there's blast beats at times. There's points in the album that sound on point for black metal. But, and then again, black metal to me, I'm not as familiar with. Mainly, I am familiar with the old guard, like mostly like second generation, like Mayhem, where it's like all lo-fi, fuzzy and stuff, those guys. And then I'm familiar with, atmospheric black metal, like so many people are doing that. There's atmospheric black metal and DSBM now. I'm used to the tremolo pick chords and the blast beats, so I imagine that's what all black metal sounds like, but that's not totally true. I mean, Behemoth is like black and death metal, so it's not totally right, but just go listen to Behemoth. That's different. That's very different from what you would think. Now, there are the blast beats that's all followed with a clean part with a very nice light solo afterwards. It's a nice mixture of sounds, not really jarring or too different to enjoy. And that there, after that, is a huge, very black metal section. It seems like black metal is the inspiration here and only partially the base for the music. It's, it's like you can tell he wasn't trying to just make black metal. It's like it's black metal at heart. But you're just not, you're probably going to listen to it and be like, nah, this sounds like Trivium. But I'd say I understand. He understood the assignment. Next we have the title track, Ibaraki Dojo. Ibaraki Doji, which translates to Ibaraki Child. Ibaraki Doji is an oni, which, if you don't know what an oni is, it's a demon or an ogre. If you ever look in Japanese folklore and you see those big, scary demons with the giant teeth, the giant, like, underbite fangs that come up, that's an oni. They're featured in tales of the Heian period. In the tales, Ibaraki Doji is based on Mount Oe and once went on a rampage in Kyoto. The Ibaraki in his name may refer to Ibaraki Osaka. Doji means child, but in this context is a demon offspring. Ibaraki Doji was the most important servant of Shuten Doji, a mythical oni leader of Japan who, according to legend, was killed by the hero Minamoto Raikou. You still keeping up there? Although decapitated, the demon's detached head still took a bite at the hero, who avoided death by wearing multiple helmets stacked on his head. That's kind of fun. Ibaraki Doji is the demon of Rashomon. He's the mascot of Trivium, also the name of this band. And it's where this demon named Ibaraki Doji, which means demon child, was terrorizing Rashomon. A samurai named Watanabe no Tsuna chopped off the demon's arm, but he comes back years later disguised as Watanabe's aunt, grabs the arm, and turns back into Ibaraki Doji. He's never seen again in Japanese folklore. Very interesting. Japanese folklore is one that I've never really delved into. I know some stuff from Greek, especially playing Hades. It kind of, it doesn't, yeah, it inundates you with folklore and like stories and stuff, but it's not like just these huge lore dumps. It's more so like the game story lore. But it's also, it also kind of gives you some insight into some things. Like Zeus makes some jokes, like, to the main character who is the son of Hades, he's like, wouldn't it be funny if I was your father? Just kidding. And it's like, well, you're everybody else's father, because everybody knows Zeus just likes to dip his wick in everything. Anyways, I digress. And so we're going to call this the title track. So this one's quite a bit heavier than the last one, immediately. It's got a huge, sweeping, epic feel to it due to the strings and the beginning of the song. And there's a cool part, almost spoken word, and partly screaming chorus here too, with more blast beats. And there's one scream where Matt channels his collaborator, Isan. Oh, just one or two. Isan just has these screams that most black metal screams, you can like kind of get lost in the sauce and you don't know which one's which. Isan, you know him when you hear him. He has a very specific scream. It sounds pained, it sounds labored, it sounds anguished. And Isan's scream to me is like, it's one of my favorites. I love Isan's screams. I became familiar with him more with Leprous, but also when he went solo. And the first time I heard him was Frozen Lakes on Mars. Very good stuff. There's lots of strings throughout this one, and there's a lot of correct extracurricular instrumentation on this album. Lots of like extra instruments. And again, it brings about more of an epic folk feel. Like this is Matt's try at a Monomarth, but for Japanese folklore. And ends with another nice sustained scream. I don't remember if I mentioned that on the last album or the last song. Yeah, you're gonna find that this isn't trying. It's not trying to be something it's not, if that's what it seemed like I was implying by like, it doesn't sound like black metal. No, it's just it's a different stripe of black metal, I would say. So, we move on to Jikoku Dayu. Dayu is a term of respect for the highest rank of courtesan. Now, I know what a courtesan is. I learned that from One Piece. They are basically like high. I think they're like high dollar, the highly respected escorts. Like the men love them. Sometimes really love them and, want to buy them gifts and favor and stuff. And women respect them, I think. Don't quote me on that. I'm kind of going off of One Piece, which is mostly fantasy. Okay. So, Dayu is a term of respect for the highest rank of courtesan, while Jigoku, hell, is the lowest form of an unlicensed person working in the pleasure quarters. Her robe is appropriately decorated with scenes of torture of the Buddhist hell. Jigoku Dayu comes from a painting I saw at a museum in San Francisco when they had an exhibit of the Japanese courtesans. Courtesans, I don't know which way it's pronounced. I didn't know that prostitution was such a big thing in ancient Japanese culture, but there was this one piece of this woman in a kimono with all these scenes of hell, and I was really drawn to it. The story is that Jigoku Dayu had a noble life, but was captured by bandits and forced into prostitution. To symbolize what she felt her life was, she made a kimono with all these etchings of hell. She's known as the Hell Courtesan. Now, this one starts off very mellow, almost leaning towards a ballad. And the chorus is pretty interesting sounding, with almost like a false strange timing. Like, it feels off, but it's definitely in 4/4. It's one of those things where, like, you take off a beat from one measure of 4/4, and then you add it on to the end of another beat another measure of 4/4. So it's like 3/4, 5/4, but it's still 4/4. I like things like that. It's like, it's kind of like, yeah, you're trying. It's fun. It's a fun thing to do. If I was writing music, I would do that a lot. Now, the song picks up around 3 minutes in, bringing in screams and distortion and a few more blast beats. It actually almost gets into proper black metal feels at one point, but it never truly strays into it. It's almost like he actively thinks, I should not do this. I shouldn't go full black metal. Like, it just, I should never do it. In the last couple of minutes, it gets incredibly upbeat, and I'm pretty sure that there's some actual time signature buggery there. I can't remember the part well enough now. By the end, I will say this is the Ibaraki ballad. Oh, my kids are up. Well, I guess we'll have to continue this later. So, this is not really a ballad, but it's as close as they'll likely get to one, as far as black metal is ever concerned, and another sustained growl to end off. Very good album so far. So next, we move on to Tamashi no Hokai, or Tamashi no Hokai. I just feel like Tamashi is, again, the American pronunciation of a Japanese word, as opposed to Tamashi sounds a lot more deliberate. So let's see what is said here. Tamashi no Hokai means the breaking of the soul, or soul collapse. It's a Japanese term that didn't exist before, but one we forged to reflect the song's meaning. Tamashi no Hokai is co-written by Isan, the legend behind Emperor, and a musician who's been a longtime influence and mentor to so much that I do in music. The writing of this song was the turning point for Ibaraki. It summarized everything from the past, present, and future of what I thought black metal was, is, and could be. Tamashi no Hokai is the perfect summary and representation of everything that Ibaraki is and will be. And I would say, if you're looking for the perfect song to kind of summarize the sound, the overall sound that Ibaraki is supposed to represent, I'd say, yeah, Tamashi no Hokai is that. So, it starts off, though, with, like, the little Mario coin sound, which is funny. But then it gets into a part that certainly sounds like black metal. You've got your tremolo picked chords, that's what I'm looking for. And this is actually the first single revealed featuring the legendary Isan. It's also got the most conventional sounding chorus so far, with more of that kind of folk feeling. It's got more of that, I don't know what stringed instrument that is, I feel like Japan has a boatload, a absolute buttload of stringed instruments, and I don't know which one that is. I don't know what it is, but it gives it a distinctly Japanese feel. That sounds wrong to say, but that's how it feels. But yeah, the chorus is pretty conventional sounding structurally, and as far as like the feel goes, it's just a kind of singy chorus. There are actually lots of game noises, mainly at the start and in the bridge. I think it's just like the coin noise that I'm hearing, but at different like octaves and different registers. And then it ends where, we begin on the furious riff from the beginning. This song really kind of, it makes a good impression. It is definitely like the most black metal sounding song that we've heard so far. Up next is Akumu, which is a noun meaning nightmare, incubus, or riding hag, because Japan always has something extra and disturbing, usually dealing with old people or little girls, it seems like. Children. Akumu translates to nightmare. I wrote this song in Tamashii before knowing this would be a Japanese project, so that's why they're a bit different. When I presented Nergal with the track, I asked him to translate the lyrics to Polish and sing them that way. Just by coincidence, drummer Alex Bent was playing a reggaeton beat. So we've got a black metal song with Polish screaming, a Japanese theme, and a reggaeton beat, which I'm pretty sure is something that's never happened before. I would have to agree, it probably hasn't. I hadn't really noticed the reggaeton beat. But what I do notice is this one feels far more sinister than what we've heard before. And that's kind of rightfully so, as stated previously, it features the legendary Nergal of Behemoth. Behemoth being a Polish black and death metal band that has been around for ages and is kind of, they're like a gold standard in the world of death metal, black metal, and the mix of the two. I mean, they're just held in highly, high regard, especially after like what was that album that came out, The Satanist, that Behemoth did. See, and I don't know if I really mentioned it, but Isan is from Emperor. Emperor being like, I did mention this, like a second wave black metal band, one of the most influential ever. I don't really had anybody else to talk about besides them. So he makes himself known, Nergal does, pretty early on too, with a truly monstrous performance. And the interlude riff here is heavy as hell and really enjoyable. Now, this is another more black metal leaning song, which leads me to believe with the previous statement of this and Tamashii being written before knowing it was going to be a Japanese project, basically meaning that they were written at the start. These are like the two oldest. This is why everything else that came after sounds different, because Akumu sounds like it's in that vein of black metal. There's a couple other songs that have there's maybe one other song that I can think of that has that the real feel of it. Like it was like I came in to do black metal and I accomplished my goals. I did what I was gonna do. I understood the assignment. These two sound like that, whereas everything else kind of it doesn't sound disjointed. It more so sounds like with everything else, he kind of started to stray and figure out more of what he really wanted it to sound like. So it all kind of got away from him. And remember, this was some of this stuff stretches back to like 2011. At least the ideas, maybe some of the recordings do, but yeah, these are some of the oldest. You can see kind of an evolution over time that some of the later ones are less just in that straight black metal vein, because Matt probably over time was like, this shouldn't be just a typical black metal thing. Now, this song even carries that haunted cathedral sound Behemoth always has, seems to have at certain points, which is really good. He brings the atmosphere with him. Now, that kind of makes me wonder if Nergal played guitar as well. I feel like Isan contributed guitars as well. I'm pretty sure he did. I don't even remember if he does vocals on this album. It's been so long since I looked at this stuff. But I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Nergal does play guitar, and I forget all that. Man, I remember when I thought, oh man, I'm not a huge Behemoth fan, but we might lose Nergal. Like, it made me legitimately upset because he had bone cancer, I think. But he jumped off tour, he went to the hospital, he got it taken care of, and that was like around a decade ago, I think. And he's been just plugging away, just cool and copacetic. He's all good. But in summary, this song is the heaviest thing that we've heard so far. I kind of sparse lyrics or sparse notes here. Sorry guys, I don't remember. I don't even remember taking these. I know I took them, but like, let's. Don't know. I feel like I'm still feeling myself out as far as notes go, and how they're taken and how they're done, and it's gonna be a process. Up next is Komorebi. Komorebi? Don't know. We'll just say Komorebi. Komorebi is a Japanese term that already exists. It means sunlight filtered through leaves on trees. Japanese is such an interesting language because they'll have a single word that means some like arbitrary phrase, and it's because every single part has a certain meaning, and then when you put them together a certain way, you've got your root, but then you just have to fill in the blanks. So it's probably like sunlight filtered leaves, trees, and then you just have to say, you have to fill in the little middle parts. I just thought it was so Japanese that there was a word for that kind of description. Thank you, Matt. But the song is a lot like something I would write for Trivium, where it's a new story that sort of pictures the world of Ibaraki, like a Japanese version of that show Vikings. It's mostly acoustic, but it crescendos into this big, electric cacophony of sounds. So, yeah, this one is a good mix of heavy and folky. But it's mostly very strange sounding. The verse riff sounds very hypnotic and almost like something from a snake charmer. And Heafy even channels World Dane with his singing at points. Like, World Dane, rest in peace, the late vocalist of the great band Nevermore. You may have heard of Nevermore. If you're a little bit on the younger side, you may not have heard of Nevermore. They were this weird band that fell in between power metal and thrash metal. He had these stupid, incredible power metal vocals. Like nothing else, like nobody else. Not like other power metal guys that are all high and on the falsetto. He could do that, but he very rarely did. He very rarely did after they switched up their style. But they were heavier. They had a nastier, meaner sound than any other power metal band. And then you get to not Dreaming Neon Black, Dead Heart in a Dead World, their 2000 album. And it's all different because now they're playing seven strings and they're playing in like A sharp. And it's just really menacing and scary sounding. There, if you want something to listen to, Dead Heart in a Dead World, Enemies of Reality, and for sure, This Godless Endeavor. That is my favorite of theirs. Even though I've only really listened to a few of their albums, their music has always just completely blown me away. But yeah, go listen to that band for a reference as to what I mean when I'm saying he's channeling Worldane. Worldane is a very specific way of singing and a very specific like cadence, and different things and techniques that he does that Matt also emulates here that I picked up on. It's a very different feel for this band. And there's lots of weird soundscapes in here too, like these space noises, violins. This one's very out there sound-wise. It gets pretty mellow during the midsection, but does pick up again, like you said, with an awesome solo. And there's even more little Worldane antics. I gotta listen to this album again because some of this stuff I'm not remembering. But first, I have to put down Liminal Right and Scoring the End of the World. But man, I'm loving it. I remember particularly loving this album, and we've made it to a point that I particularly love. Ronin. Here's one of the big ones that kind of lit everything up for a while. There, Ronin is a masterless warrior. The final two full compositions on Rashomon see a significant shift musically. The album as a whole, with the exception of the intro and outro, is actually presented in chronological order of earliest written to lattermost. Okay, so there's the answer to that. The actual guitar and bass tracks are a time capsule of sorts, in that their parts on the final album are actually from the year they were tracked. One can begin to see the shifts as the years went on for the writing of the album. Kagutsuchi and Ibaraki Doji being written and tracked in 2010, 2011, all the way up to Ronin, Susanoo, is it Susanoo? I keep hearing Susanoo, but I also hear Susanoo. Susanoo no Makoto. That's what I'm gonna say. Susanoo no Makoto. No Mikoto. I hate everything. I think I misspelled that. Hold on. Hold please. I have to, I have to look this up because it's gonna drive me nuts. It's gonna drive me nuts. Mikoto. Okay. Back to reading what was there. Kagutsuchi and Ibaraki Doji being written and tracked back in 2010, 2011, all the way up to Ronin, Susanoo no Mikoto being written and tracked in 2016 to 2017. So there you go. Matt answered my own musings by basically saying, no, they're basically written in order, I think. So that means that, I guess. Did he not say earlier that these were some of the earlier kajiggers, some of the earlier things? Yeah. He wrote Akumu and Tamashii before knowing this would be a black metal project. Yeah, but that doesn't mean that he actually tracked them and recorded them. I don't know. Matt is a strange guy. Not strange, it's just a, you can't really just kind of pigeonhole what he does sometimes. He's different. Now, as for the collaboration with Way, Gerard Way has been a long-time inspiration for me, like Isan and Nergal. I have looked to Gerard as a constant source of motivation to be creative. While Gerard and I may be from different genres than where Ibaraki and black metal stem from, outsiders of sorts, the spirit and intent of our performances is what unites our passion for pushing boundaries. You heard that correctly. Gerard Way. The song features Gerard Way of My Chemical Romance. That's exactly who you're thinking of. Helena, the Welcome to the Black Parade, I'm Not Okay, I Promise. That guy. Gerard Way. On harsh vocals. Harsh vocals. On an extreme metal album. What is happening in 2022, man? I didn't have that on my 2022 bingo card. Don't think anybody did. I wasn't ready. So it actually starts off kind of low-key. It's very almost normal, clean vocals and dissonance from Hefe, and then it's got kind of like a huge, triumphant-sounding chorus. And then blast beats crash in, and Way, Gerard Way, comes in for the kill with these just nasty, disgusting shrieks. And when I listen, now I've got something interesting to put in, because I don't remember where I got this from. I think it was on Genius as well. Now, when you listen, it's like, yeah, okay. If you're old enough to remember, like, some of the old My Chemical Romance, like, before Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge, like, back on, what is it? I Brought My Bullets Now, and I don't remember the first one. The one that has, like, Vampires Will Never Hurt You, and what is it? Baby, this mirror's not big enough for the both of us or something. Anyways, dear God, the titles back then. Them and Panic at the Disco were real bad about having, like, paragraphs for titles. Somebody else that had a literal paragraph for a title. But if you remember his screams from back then, you can kind of pick it out and be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But it's still Gerard Way from My Chemical Romance on a black metal song. Like blast beats. And apparently also featured on this song is Isan's son with Inar Solberg's sister. Their child on here. Now, I don't know what truth there is to that. But if it is, that's also incredibly cool. But doesn't change the fact that Gerard Way is featured on this song doing unclean vocals on black metal. It's unbelievably powerful. It sounds like he's been doing this for the last 20 years and has never stopped. Now, I feel like people did the Brendan Fraser thing with him a little bit, except with Brendan Fraser, we all love him, and we will continue to, and we will always hold him up, because he is a damn national treasure, and you leave him the hell alone. He can get chunky if he wants to. He's had a rough time for the past, like, couple decades. It's been tough on him, so, yeah, leave Brendan Fraser alone. Gerard Way, I don't know if he had a tough time, but I know he put on a little bit of weight and, he went away, he did comics and stuff, he did some other stuff, and I feel like people kind of made fun of him, and it's like, all that just goes by the wayside hearing this. And then also their new music, I mean, they might, I don't know, they might. The Mars Volta's new music. I have to listen to it. Anyways. I digress. I digress. Yeah, I think people kind of made fun of him a little bit for kind of putting on some weight and looking like a dad and, being a little bit older. But I think we can, like, rightfully throw all that shit over our shoulder because it's done with. He's great. They're still great. MCR is still great. And Gerard Way is definitely still great here. Unbelievably powerful. He comes right back again. He comes right back again. Like, you get a full verse of him, and then you think it's gonna switch back to something else. Like clean singing? Nope. Here he comes again. Like a fucking missile. Ugh. It's so good. And it really blows the mind that he can go this hard. And it really does make me excited for a future release from MCR, 'cause it seems like they're going in some kind of different direction from the I can't remember what it's called, the State of Decay. I can't remember it. Either way, it just makes me really excited about MCR's new album, or another album, or whatever the hell they do next. And Hefe's chorus is kind of sprinkled throughout. Now, after the verses, we shift into interlude mode, kind of, with there's like a nice solo thrown in, but mostly similar variations of this one theme that kind of continues to flow throughout, with like some leads playing it, and then the rhythm kind of plays it. There's some chugs that go along with it. Now, it can kind of drag if you're like really sitting there focusing on it, but if you just let the music kind of flow, it's really not a big deal. It just kind of, after the end, it gets into like this little inner instrumental part, and then it goes right back to the first verse and chorus, which is very jarring because it's like there's no real transition. It just kind of like goes straight to it, almost like it was cut that way. It's somewhat minimalistic. It ends with a choir right before you think they do the chorus again. It's a really fun song. It cuts deep with that last one because you think you're gonna get to hear Gerard Way come back, but it's just done, and it's okay. It's a great song. Really fun. And now we move on to the penultimate track, Susanoo no Mikoto, which I misspelled. Susanoo no Mikoto is the Japanese storm god who is expelled from heaven in the Shinto religion. What I like about the Japanese stories of the gods is a lot like Norse mythology or Greek mythology, but Shintoism isn't a mythology, it's an actual religion. My mom practices Shinto, but the gods are imperfect, which I love. In this story, Susanoo kills an eight-headed dragon, Orochi probably, by getting each of the heads drunk on sake so he can save a fisherman's daughter and force her to marry him. I have the whole story tattooed on my back. That's not surprising. That's not surprising. Yeah, so see, there you go again. Susanoo, I think, is Susano? I've always heard Susano. Maybe it's Susano. I don't know. That's a hero from Yamato no Orochi. This honestly with the eight-headed dragon, which obviously is Orochi himself. That sounds like Yamato no Orochi. But I can't remember. I don't know if that's the actual point of the point of that story. I know it's kind of a big thing in Japanese Japanese culture. It's a really interesting note about Shintoism because I'm not familiar really at all. I will say this. Apparently there is kind of, I can't remember what it's called, but after listening to the last podcast stuff on the black metal scene back in the early 90s, mainly those second wave guys that burned churches and killed each other and themselves. Norse mythology does have an actual sector that treats it as a religion, but it seems like it could be mildly problematic because the guys who are seem to be a part of it also seem to kind of just take it as this is the way that it's supposed to be, and it's very us versus them, and if you do anything else, you're kind of totally wrong, and you're, doing the earth a disservice and the gods a disservice, and you're just not worthy. It's very unfortunate. It could be so much cooler. It could be so much cooler. It's kind of like, heathen, like heathenism almost. I mean, I don't think that's the actual term. I'm just calling it heathenism, like people that look to the Norse gods because that makes sense to them. And I mean, some people laugh at it. I think it's very cool that people look elsewhere and find something. Like I've thought of looking to the Egyptian gods at times. I thought of looking at Kemetism, but then I kind of realized it's a little jacked up to be Jewish, but also like worship Egyptian gods, because we don't have to do that anymore. We can make our own decisions. And I choose to still be on the fence religiously, while still being Jewish. But that's very cool. So on to the song. It's a strange start, lots of different feelings. It's almost a post-metal feel with how the music mixes heavy and light. And also, the first time here, I think we actually get Japanese lyrics here. The first I'm noticing. They may be sprinkled throughout. It's a very upbeat sounding song, very triumphant sounding. Though it does halfway, about halfway through, it turns sinister, cinematic, like epic again. And again, kind of jaunty. There's a lot of jauntiness, you know? There's a lot of jauntiness in this album. And now, here's the point, finally at the end, where we get Ihsahn's just pained, just labored screams. It sounds like it should hurt him, but he's got it down to a science. If you want outside of Emperor, because I'm whole Emperor is a foreign thing to me. If you want a good song to hear Ihsahn's vocals, the end of Contaminate Me by Leprous from their third album, Coal. My God, it is horrifying stuff. Because he's just got these long, high screams, raspiness, and just. It's really scary. The first time I ever listened to that song, it's like two different songs. Because you got this upbeat, like really heaviness, really heavy bit that's really good. And then it cuts and it slows down. And you've just got Ihsahn screaming over just like basically atmosphere and some drums and stuff. And I'm just staring at my screen like, this is so fucking scary. I don't like it. I don't like it at all, man. It's so good. It's so good. Ihsahn is a legend. Pretty sure he did burn some churches back in the day. And he also probably said they deserved it. But since then, he's kind of said that was my adolescence. And you know what? Yeah. Like, obviously, he still did it. But also, yeah, they were all like 18, 19. They were all like late teens, early 20s. So they were stupid. all impressionable, all trying to fit into this scene and be, you know, cool guys. It's a lot of peer pressure. I get it. Also, not happy that it happened the way it happened. But yeah, this is it's a good song. And then we get the ultimate song, Kaizoku, which I know that one from One Piece. It's the Japanese term for Viking. And he says it's a word he's never seen before, but One Piece uses it. And I think it kind of means like Viking, or it can be also interchangeably used for pirate. I've described the outro as having an almost Nightmare Before Christmas vibe if it had happened in Eastern Europe, or a kind of spaghetti Western gypsy sound. I mentioned this to a friend of mine who's a journalist in Prague, and she said it actually makes sense because spaghetti Westerns were inspired by Akira Kurosawa's films. So the whole thing came around. Makes sense. I'm a little off on spaghetti Westerns. I don't know that much about them. I don't know much about them. But I will say, yeah, this is some Nightmare Before Christmas type shit. It's jaunty again. It's jaunty and piratey. It's like a shanty. It is. There's actual accordion here. It's a damn pirate shanty. That's what it is. It literally is that. And we have a shanty to end off the album. And that, guys, is Rashomon. The debut album. Hopefully not the last of Ibaraki. Hopefully this isn't just like an aberration. Just a little project. Hopefully he comes back. And hopefully he comes back with more people. Even more features and influences. Because this is something else. It's a lot of fun. It's a kind of a different side of Matt from Trivium that we get to see here. He put together a lot of really interesting songs and interesting sounds, and it's really cool to see how the project evolved over time as these songs were basically like written and tracked over spans of like, oh, it seems like a decade at the very least, like more than a decade. This is a definite recommendation for me. It's really good. I mean, there's some points where I kind of loses my attention a little bit, but that's every album. Overall, I do understand how it is black metal at heart, but it doesn't. I mean, I guess it's about how it feels. Like Isan said, the fleeting fragility or whatever it is, which. You know, that makes a lot of sense. That's kind of what it's about. So, rankings. At the very bottom, I mean, just because of what they are. Hanaki Hitsuzen, it's the intro. Kaizoku, it's the outro. But Kaizoku is super fun. It's a damn shanty with an accordion. It's really fun. I almost thought of ranking it higher, but I can't put it over other stuff. Then we've got Komorebi. Good song. It's just, again, you. A lot of the time I look at the bottom song and I'm like, you're great. It's just, everything else is so much better. Jigoku Daiyu is just a really great ballad. But again, it just gets crushed by everything else. Akumu is really cool. That's the next one on the list. It's very heavy. Nergal is a monster, but, you know, it's, again, I can't find anything disparaging to say. It's just something else trumps it. Ibaraki Doji is just an all-around great song, but it couldn't stand up to Tamashii no Hokai, and it's kind of a sing-songy chorus, honestly. But it's a really good song. But Ronin is just massive. Massively huge. But then I can't even put that at the top because Kagutsuchi is so good. Man, it is a monster of a song. I really didn't expect the very first actual song on the album to be my favorite, but I couldn't get over it. It's like nothing else really stood up to it. Nothing else really did. In my eyes. So, I'm not going to hang around and try to really draw things out because I gotta drive to Mississippi tomorrow again. So, yeah, I'm gonna wrap this one up. Next week, we're gonna be back. Damn it. And we're gonna be back with the latest from techno electronic metal wizard, the Algorithm. We're gonna be back with Data Renaissance next week. So if you enjoy the show, you haven't completely abandoned me because I went away for like a month without like any real precedent. You can subscribe to my Patreon, patreon.com/x3r0distortion. Buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/0distortion, spelled with an X. You can. I've lost it all. It's been so long. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and I guess TikTok. I literally have done nothing on TikTok at x3r0distortion. And that's a wrap, guys. See you next time.